I'll look. Tell me about the lizards. Ford shrugged again. Some people say that the lizards are the best thing that ever happened to them, he said. They're completely wrong, of course. Completely and utterly wrong. But someone's got to say it. But that's terrible, said Arthur. Listen, Bud, said Ford, if I had one Altarian dollar for every time I heard one bit of the universe look at another bit of the universe and say, that's terrible, I wouldn't be sitting here like a lemon looking for a gin. But I haven't and I am. Anyway, what are you looking so placid and moon-eyed for? Are you in love? Arthur said, yes, he was, and said it placidly. With someone who knows where the gin bottle is, do I get to meet her? He did, because Fenchurch came in at that moment with a pile of newspapers she'd been to the village to buy. She stopped in astonishment at the wreckage on the table and the wreckage from Beetlejuice on the sofa. "Where's the gin?" said Ford to Fenchurch, and to Arthur. "What happened to Trillian, by the way?"
"This is Fenchurch," said Arthur awkwardly. "There was nothing with Trillian. You must have seen her last."
"Oh, yeah," said Ford. "She went off with Zaphod somewhere. They had some kids or something. At least," he added, "I think that's what they were. Zaphod's calmed down a lot, you know."
"Really?" said Arthur, clustering hurriedly around Fenchurch to relieve her of the shopping.
"Yeah," said Ford, "at least one of his heads is now saner than an emu on acid."
"Arthur, who is this?" said Fenchurch.
"Ford Prefect," said Arthur. "I may have mentioned him in passing."
Chapter 37. For a total of 3 days and nights, the giant silver robot stood in stunned amazement, straddling the remains of Knightsbridge, swaying slightly and trying to work out a number of things. Government deputations came to see it, ranting journalists by the truckload each asked each other questions on the air about what they thought of it. Flights of fighter bombers tried pathetically to attack it, but no lizards appeared. It scanned the horizon slowly. At night, it was at its most spectacular, floodlit by the teams of television crews who covered it continuously as it continuously did nothing. It thought and thought and eventually reached a conclusion. It would have to send out its service robots. It should have thought of that before, but it was having a number of problems. The tiny flying robots came screeching out of the hatchway one afternoon in a terrifying cloud of metal. They roamed the surrounding terrain, frantically attacking some things and defending others. One of them at last found a pet shop with some lizards, but it instantly defended the pet shop for democracy so savagely that little in the area survived. A turning point came when a crack team of flying screechers discovered the zoo in Regent's Park, and most particularly the reptile house. Learning a little caution from their previous mistakes in the pet shop, the flying drills and fret saws brought some of the larger and fatter iguanas to the giant silver robot, who tried to conduct high-level talks with them. Eventually, the robot announced to the world that despite the full, frank, and wide-ranging exchange of views, the high-level talks had broken down. The lizards had been retired, and that it, the robot, would take a short holiday somewhere, and for some reason selected Bournemouth. Ford Prefect, watching it on TV, nodded, laughed, and had another beer. Immediate preparations were made for its departure. The flying toolkit screeched and sawed and drilled and fried things with light throughout that day and all through the night time, and in the morning, stunningly, a giant mobile gantry started to roll westwards on several roads simultaneously, with the robot standing on it, supported within the gantry. Westward it crawled like a strange carnival buzzed around by its servants and helicopters and news coaches, scything through the land until at last it came to Bournemouth, where the robot slowly freed itself of its transport system's embraces and went and lay for 10 days on the beach. It was, of course, by far the most exciting thing that had ever happened to Bournemouth. Crowds gathered daily along the perimeter, which was staked out and guarded as the robot's recreation area, and tried to see what it was doing. It was doing nothing. It was lying on the beach. It was lying a little awkwardly on its face. It was a journalist from a local paper who, late one night, managed to do what no one else in the world had so far managed, which was to strike up a brief, intelligible conversation with one of the service robots guarding the perimeter. It was an extraordinary breakthrough. "I think there's a story in it," confided the journalist over a cigarette shared through the steel link fence, "but it needs a good local angle. I've got a little list of questions here," he went on, rummaging awkwardly in an inner pocket. "Perhaps you could get him, it, whatever you call him, to run through them quickly." The little flying ratchet screwdriver said it would see what it could do and screeched off.